You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Curtain Up Theater people, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your Program Is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, Your Program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater and smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and it's our goal on this show to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. Tonight's show is a part of a new series called Act Two Places. I'm bringing on a series of guests to discuss how COVID-19 affected them and their organizations. As you all know, we've been hit hard with a complete, hopefully temporary change of lifestyle and business systems during the pandemic, and theater definitely wasn't spared. In fact, theater has undergone one of its biggest shifts, if not the biggest shift, in history of modern theater. This series gives theater folks an opportunity to discuss the effects of this shift on them and their organizations. Now, my guests on today's show are the critically lauded, award-winning LGBTQ theater ensemble from Dublin, Ireland, Acting Out. Fans may recognize them as guests from one of our earlier shows, one of our earliest shows, actually. They were very, very nice and came on, and I was loving that. Well, they're back to tell us how they're strategizing their ensemble through COVID-19 across the pond. So this is going to be a really interesting perspective because most of my guests are in America, so I'm going to see how it's comparing. So let's bring them on. Hi, Acting Out, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Hi,
it's so nice to see you. I'm fine. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. How are things going out there?
It's tricky. I suppose we're getting used to it in a kind of weird way. But Dublin's just gone back into sort of semi-lockdown. So all the kind of performance spaces, all the art centres, all the bars, the restaurants, cafes are all closed other than for takeout. So that's a bit depressing. So it's going to be like that for the next three weeks. Yeah. So good, things were getting slightly better, slightly more normalised. But it's kind of one step forward, two steps back, really.
Indeed. I really want to get into that, but before we do, let's have you introduce yourselves and tell us your function with the Acting Out team.
So my name is Howard Lodge, and I'm the artistic director, I suppose, with Acting Out.
Okay. And Sean Denya, and I do lots of different things. Well, we both do lots of different things, but I suppose kind of producing and writing is kind of my main thing. I sometimes perform, sometimes direct, but producing and writing is my main things. Yeah.
Cool. Did you write Can You See Me?
I did.
It's lovely. Tell our audience about that, because that's one of the things that you've been doing to keep yourself, I don't want to say relevant, but active during COVID-19. Tell us about the project.
Yeah, okay. We were wondering what we could do within the kind of limitations of COVID-19. And obviously we weren't able to, we had kind of lots of summer plans, which we'll probably talk to you later about, which suddenly all got cancelled or postponed. So I was thinking, I wanted to kind of write something for Howard, because we kind of lived together, we're a husband and husband. Mm-hmm. So we're like a little bubble. So I thought one thing I could do is write Howard something kind of specifically for him. And we'd have a go at filming it. And we got, just as I was kind of thinking that idea, we were contacted by a guy called Ryan Thornhill, who has started up a virtual fringe festival. He actually lives in, he's currently living in China, but he's lived all over the world, and he's really theatre nut. And he wanted to do an online kind of theatre festival. So I said, yes, so, you know, I've had an idea, we'll do this thing and see how it goes. So it was a kind of short piece, 25 minutes, based on...
Let me interject there. we're here, based here in Dublin, and my mother, my 86-year-old mother, lives in England, and I try and phone her once a week using FaceTime, which she's pretty good at, I have to say. You know, probably better than me, but Sean obviously sat here in the living room and eavesdropped onto all of our conversations. as a result, Can You See Me was born out of that. So from an eavesdropping point of view. And then there's also a little bit of fiction in there as well. But a lot of the things that I said in the play, I did actually say, well, we actually said to each other in real life, me and my mother.
Yeah, yeah, the story's fiction, but the tone of the conversations is very directly taken from Howard's conversations with his mother.
It's a monologue piece for those who haven't seen it, and you really should go to the Acting Out website and Facebook page, which you guys will give me the information for that later, and watch it, because it's a confession between a man and his mother over Zoom or FaceTime or whatever they're using for that, where he wants to make sure that she knows the truth of his life. And it factors in so many things that we're all feeling right now, particularly the I don't know when I'll see you again in person.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that really hit me, because I know that, like, the first thing when this lifts and we're vaccinated, which I think is very, very close, I want to get on an airplane and go see my sister and my niece and nephew in Alabama. David wants to go see his family in California.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so does that character, did when you were thinking about it, is the COVID lockdown and the sense of isolation, is that something that really motivated him and his, I believe the character's name is Michael, right? Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that what motivated Michael to say, who knows what's going to happen in this world? Mm-hmm. I need to say this now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think that's, you know, I know a lot of people who have had those kind of feelings that they don't want to hold back on telling people close to them, who they are, what they think. It's kind of the feeling that now is the time, particularly if you've got more elderly kind of parents or people who are important to you. There's this sort of feeling, particularly at that time, perhaps a bit earlier on, that you never knew the moment when, they might be gone. So you need to say what you need to say while you still have the opportunity. And I think sometimes, having a sort of FaceTime or Zoom conversation, it's not the same. You don't have the kind of touch and all those other things which are part of kind of being human. But in some ways it allows perhaps more difficult conversations to occur. It's a bit like when you're sitting in a car with somebody and going for a drive. Sometimes there's something about that environment which enables more difficult conversations to occur. And I think it's sometimes a bit similar, mm-hmm. With these kind of new methods of communicating. People can sometimes say things that they couldn't say to the person in if they were in the same room.
Wow. I totally agree. And you know what? It's really, really funny too. I love the flip of the mother being, like you said, a little slightly ahead of Michael when it comes to technology, watching her documentaries on YouTube. And calling Michael out on it. It's, I love that part. That made me really laugh. Now I just have a quick question on the video. What is a shirt lifter, and how did that phrase come about? We don't have that in America, I don't think. I mean, I'm sure we have it. We just maybe don't call it that.
Well, I certainly do have them. a shirt lifter is a not very nice kind of slang term for a gay man.
it's a bit kind of English public school.
Yes, probably that's where it came from, but they use it here. So
what does it like, what technically, what does it mean? It's like somebody who'll go lift the shirt up off of a man?
No. You would, if you were the shirt lifter, you'd be lifting up your shirt to enable.
That's enough.
We do have an explicit warning, so you're welcome to go further, but I don't know. That seems so benign to me. Sometimes the phrases when they cross over, they don't really have the effect.
Between
the continents, and so. But I just
It wouldn't tend to get used now, but that's why we thought it was funny, because it's sort of word. His mother might know, you know, so probably, you know, sort of, it's a more like
it's of an era.
Yeah, it's of an era. It doesn't tend to get used now. But for his mother's generation, where they couldn't actually say the word homosexual, you know, shirt lifter was another way of naming something.
Yeah, I would assume that the closest thing we would have to that here is maybe the word fairy. I know you have fairy. I've been there. I know you have fairy. But just like you've been here and you know that we have shirt lifters. But I think that maybe perhaps a millennial that wouldn't really register. Like, how does that? Yeah. You know, they think of fairies as Disney.
Yeah.
And I've seen both kind of fairies at Disney too. So. Now, give our audience a brief history of acting out, how it came about, what is your mission statement, things like that, please.
Okay.
So we founded Acting Out in September 2008. I'd recently moved to Dublin and noticed a kind of gap in the market for an exclusively LGBTQ plus drama group, community drama group. So that's how we started off. Very small beginnings, a few workshops, then we did a small production, and from that we kind of snowballed, we gained more and more members, and we've got quite a large kind of extended Acting Out family now. And so we wanted to have a platform where we told kind of gay stories through drama, through theatre. Everything we've done so far has been exclusively gay-themed. And we feel that's really important. It's kind of given a voice within the community to a community, if you see what I mean. That's how we look at it.
Wow. And I have to tell you, just for a little context here, my husband David and I, we wrote our play At the Flash, and it was accepted into the Dublin Gay Theatre Festival, the International Dublin Gay Theatre Festival. Sorry, I stand corrected. And that's where we met you guys. We did the show, and I think the first performance was right before the first performance of your show. And I have to tell you, I have never met nicer, more supportive people at festivals. And I've been to a lot of festivals. Not that anybody's ever been rude, but you guys came in and whatever we needed, like, you were just such good ambassadors, and there was no competition. Sometimes they get competitive, I'm sure you know, and there was no competition. I mean, it was just a lovely experience for us. It really was.
Good.
Okay. So how did the COVID crisis affect Acting Out? Tell me about those first few days.
Well, it was tricky because nobody really knew what the impact was going to be, you know, and there were a huge range of views about how long it would last, you know, what were going to be the implications for things like travel. So it was very kind of confusing kind of start to things. So we'd had a great start to the year because we got, in February, we won this award. We won a gala award, which is given by, I think, probably the nearest US equivalent would be the GLAAD Awards. Is that what they are? So the national kind of LGBT organization basically gave us an award for arts and entertainment. So that was kind of a big surprise. It was a big, you know, kind of function in the Mansion House in Dublin, and it was a great night, and we thought, oh, this, what a great start. And then, like, within days, COVID had hit. So, and we had quite substantial plans, obviously kind of already worked out for the year. So Howard was going to direct a show by the Liverpool playwright Jonathan Harvey called Boom Bang A Bang. I had written a new piece, which we were going to take to the Brighton Fringe Festival and the Prague Fringe Festival. And then suddenly, we weren't sure whether we were going to be able to do that. We were also going to do them in, as part of the Dublin Pride Festival, which is a huge, huge event here now and has a whole kind of art stream to it as well as the parade and everything. So, but at that point, we still thought we probably might be able to do it. Naively. So it took probably a month or two for us to realize that we were not going to be able to do it at all, because we weren't able to obviously meet for rehearsals. Everything was kind of shut down. Then I suppose that's the other thing we found difficult, the goalposts kept moving. So Pride decided it would move to September. And we thought we'd move the show to it, to September 2, or the one Howard was going to do. The Prague Fringe Festival and the Brighton Fringe Festival decided to postpone to the autumn. So they shifted from May to October, November. And we thought then, oh, that'll be fine. So, you know, flights were booked, accommodation was booked, et cetera, to go to those. But as it kind of went on, we just realized that it was just too uncertain, that it wasn't going to be likely that we'd be able to go. And then kind of things got imposed here. Like at the moment, apart from about 5 or 6 countries, if you go anywhere else, when you come back, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And for people kind of who were going to be in the shows, that was just not going to be practical to do. We've ended up not obviously going to, I should have been going to Prague at the end of October, but for the show, but, they postponed it again back to May next year. And Brighton the same, but they're doing a little festival. So that's been very difficult in terms of any kind of planning. And I'm a sort of planner, you know, I'm always thinking ahead at the sort of the next thing. So that's kind of been very tricky. And so we've been trying to do bits and pieces using the sort of digital kind of platform. So we did Can You See Me? It was a really exciting thing for me. I had a short piece included in an anthology of pieces that were done at the Abbey Theatre, which is Ireland's national theatre. So that was lovely kind of experience for me. But we're just kind of everything is sort of postponed. So now we're still thinking we will do the kind of festivals next year, and fingers crossed, you know, we'll kind of make it over to them this time. Howard hopefully will do the play he was wanting to do next kind of Pride season. But you still don't know. So, and I'm, you know, starting to kind of write something else, start to write a new piece. But it's been very difficult, hasn't it? Like for everybody. And even in terms of seeing stuff, you know, which I think is really important if you're involved in this kind of world at all, is, you know, I get fed by seeing stuff and seeing other people's work. You know, and it's been so odd not being able to go and see anything, you know. Again, you get little teases. So the Dublin Fringe Festival was on just for the last couple of weeks. And they've done all this work trying to make socially distanced performances and performing spaces. And they put a lot of work into it. And they just got the festival sort of over before this new ramp up in restrictions kind of came in. But the Dublin Theatre Festival, which is kind of follows it, more kind of mainstream for the theatre stuff, that's all just going to have to be cancelled now, you know. So yeah, it's very uncertain, tricky, difficult kind of times.
I feel like from what I'm reading that London theater is being sort of pushed to reopen and get COVID friendly. I read a very, very nice piece on a production of Jesus Christ Superstar that was in Regent's Park that apparently was handled well. Now that was 4 weeks ago. I don't know if that has changed or people have caught flack for it or what. Can you talk about that?
They're slightly coming kind of back kind of in London. I mean, we would have gone to London frequently, as you know, to see stuff, and we haven't been there. That's another thing we haven't been able to do the last kind of 6 months. But they just tentatively starting to kind of come back. So like the Bridge Theatre has kind of reopened with a kind of a program of Alan Bennett monologues with a socially this is a theatre that can hold 1,000 people, and they're admitting 250 people. To see these kind of programs and monologues with high profile names in them. And I think that's doing well. It's kind of creeping back, but commercial theatre really can't survive with audiences of less than 70%, 80%, you know. So, I mean, maybe that's the difference between America and Europe, is that there is much more of a subsidized sector too. So the government here has given... I think the artistic community would say not nearly enough, but they have made, you know, a substantial commitment to funding or continuing to fund kind of institutions in particular more than individual kind of freelance kind of workers. But so there is a kind of recognition anyway, sort of nationally, that artists are in a terrible situation. Career-wise, economic-wise, in every other way. So there is some public funds going into keeping things going or supporting people.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
I'll tell you, here in New York, at least, and I believe that probably, you know, feeds across the rest of the country. It's been like we're on our own. A good deal of the fundraising is being done internally within the theater community. Yeah. And a lot of that is going for keeping actors and tech people, administrative people going. Their rent paid, their, you know, food, and just giving them the support that they need. But our federal government, in my opinion, is quite a mess, and we don't get a lot of sympathy from them here in New York.
Right.
Yeah. When this first happened, I put out a message on Facebook that said, "Hey, if anybody is interested in doing a show about how they're going to come back from all of this, I'm happy to do a podcast with you." And I didn't get any response. And I was like, usually when I put something out like that, two or three people would say, "Hey, we'd love to do a podcast and to help our show." And I was a little confused. And my husband, David, was like, "This just happened. This just happened." And their heads are probably spinning. There's probably a lot of emotion and grief going on. And they're just trying to figure out how to get through the next day, much less, you know, this season or next season. Is that how you guys felt?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And as I said, because of the uncertainty about how long it was going to go on for, what the kind of restrictions would be, you were hanging on to the hope. You know, as I said, we kind of thought, oh, well, of course I'll be able to go to Prague by the end of October, you know. Yeah, when, you know, this has been like March, I thought, yeah, it'll all be under control by then. And then there was a kind of creeping realization that no, it wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be under control. And as you know, you have to kind of plan things so far in advance, you know. So when you don't know what the kind of future is, it makes it very difficult to plan. So I think a lot of people have got a huge amount of inertia at the moment, as you say, because they don't know, and they're kind of stressed out just dealing with the sort of economic realities or the new way of kind of being, which seems to be changing all the time too. The rules around it kind of seem to be changing. So I think it's kind of very stressful for people. And I think, I don't know, I've had sort of bursts of, I can write, I'll write something. I've got this idea, I'll write something. And then I think, I just can't. I just can't concentrate, you know.
Yeah, it's difficult. One of the projects that I worked on through all of it was doing these virtual sort of recordings of solos from a musical that I wrote with collaborator Leo Schwartz, and there were days, because I was put in charge of this. Leo asked if I could take it over, and it was a lot, but there were days when I really had to pull from the reserves of my drive and my hope, and it turned out really, really well. And for those of you who would like to see the videos, you can go to my Facebook page, or there's a Broadway.com article that was just posted. And if you're ever wondering like how they're doing that, it explains it for you. So let's talk about the future, which I know there's a continuum that's a sliding scale of information that's just, where the hell are we now? You know, and it changes every single day you make plans, but you're both leaders. You both have leadership qualities and traits, and you lead this group. As leaders, tell me how you acclimated in keeping out going during the lockdown and quarantine. I know you did Can You See Me, but how did you approach your team? Tell me a little bit about that process.
Well, it's difficult, really, as you know. Of course it's difficult. But we just... a lot of people have done kind of online kind of theatre stuff, and I kind of gauge that with the entire group. Obviously, we keep in touch regularly. We have a Facebook Messenger thing. And we decided between us we didn't really want to go down that route. But what we did want to do was maintain contact as a group. Some more than others, obviously. So we've been meeting online. It started out once weekly. It's probably less frequent now. But we were meeting online, and we eventually morphed into like a drama baking group where we would make a cake online together and then, you know, show photographs and not everybody try their own and say what it was like. So, but it was just a means of keeping in touch in some way and doing a group activity in some way without it being necessarily theatre focused, I suppose. So that's my answer to that bit of the question. Sean, do you
want to add anything else? We were constantly thinking, you know, what can we do, you know, creative wise, and we have got a few ideas, but some of them are just quite difficult to carry out, you know, from a practical point of view, because it's like you think, oh yes, but how will we do that socially distanced, and how will we kind of rehearse, and there are a lot of kind of obstacles, and sometimes we think we have an idea and we think, no, we won't be able to do that, actually.
Oh, I've got this great idea. I'll tell you what we'll do. It's a bit like that. So we'll do this, we'll do this. And he goes, no. And then he comes to me and does the same, and I say, no. So
we have an idea about, because we're always thinking, you know, what in reality can we do? One of the things I've been doing in lockdown is reading kind of more poetry, and there's a lot of excellent kind of queer poetry coming out of Britain and Ireland at the moment, for some reason. And so we're thinking of doing a piece of people acting or performing poems and kind of putting them together. And we might kind of release them towards Christmas, like one a day, and then kind of put the whole thing together, because the poems are actually quite short. So people can do them relatively quickly. We'll get themselves or their partners or friends to sort of film them. We'll have a sort of Zoom chat over how they should be kind of directed, with kind of suggestions for settings and things like that. And then that way we can sort of keep people with a little something that isn't too difficult to carry through, because, you know, they can film it themselves, or people they know can do it. So that's something we're thinking about, just as a way of keeping the kind of group alive in some ways, you know.
Apart from making a Victoria sponge.
Apart from making a Victoria sponge. Yeah. But then, you know, as I said, we are, you know, in our more optimistic moments, we are thinking, yes, we will be able to do the play that Howard had planned to do this year, next year. Yes, I will be able to take my new play to Brighton and Prague and do it in Dublin as well. You have to sort of keep a bit of optimism, I think, even to the point of view where I've booked accommodation now in Prague. So that, you know, it's like, yes, I've done it because I believe that we will be going there, you know. And I've told the group, you know, the actors that, you know, we're doing this and you need to book your leave. And so, yeah, I think it's important to have things that you can look forward to in the future, and hopefully things are at least beginning to get back to normal.
That's great. I know that I've done one other interview in this series. It's with the New York Neo-Futurists, and that's one of the things they talked about early on in the pandemic. They just made sure that they touched base with everyone.
Yeah.
Are you okay? Do you need anything? Is there anything that I can do? And so they sort of like phone treed, if you will, all of these different the people that are in their ensemble, and people were put in charge of support systems. Like, if you need support, let me see what I can do to help you to contact Actors Equity or whatever. And so this human element that you have provided and done is actually quite smart, I think. And because in the end, we have each other in human relationships, yeah, really. And so I think it's very, very cool that you did that. And eventually it starts morphing back into the theater. Mm-hmm. As we find out where we are today or where we might be, you know, in 2 weeks, I think it's all going to happen. I think theater is such a strong force in the world that it has no choice but to boomerang back, to rebound. I really, really do.
Yeah.
So that's great. Now off topic a little bit, because I've had this question. This has nothing to do with theater, because I think you mentioned it when you said a victorious sponge. Okay. So that's what you said, right?
No, Victoria sponge, as in Queen Victoria.
Okay, so a Victoria sponge. My question, because David watches all these cooking shows, and he watches, you know, Great British Baking Show, and I'm always like, sponge. Like, here, a sponge cake is like a really bouncy cake. Is that in Europe just the cake part of the cake? What we would consider the cake part?
Yeah,
right. It's the one with flour and eggs and
yeah,
all.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just call it sponge in Europe. Okay. Because I'm like, where's the sponge cake in here? What we would consider like angel food cake, sponge cake, you know, because it's springy and bouncy. And
yeah. Like, yeah. Oh,
okay. Anyway, I love cake, and I've always wanted that cleared up. Oh my God. Okay. So we've already talked about this a little bit, but hopefully you've formulated a bit more of an answer by reading the script. Based on your observations, what are some of the differences between the way Europe theater is handling COVID and the States? I gave you a little bit about my perspective. What's yours back?
Well, it seems to me that it's much more like you're on your own there, you know, or you're relying on sort of philanthropy. We've watched a few things, kind of American things, you know, and they're very heavily promoting donations to the various kind of organizations that help actors and technicians and everybody else kind of working in the industry, which is going on here too. But there is a sense that there is much more government awareness and support for the art sector, which I don't sort of get the impression that there is perhaps in the US to anything like the same degree. And that's partly a structural thing, because even before this, you know, there would be much less government funding or state funding perhaps for the arts than there is kind of in Europe. I mean, I suppose the other side of that is there's probably less philanthropy here. You know, people think, oh, you know, the government subsidizes that theatre, so, you know, I'm going to give my cash to somebody else. So I don't know. I don't know if that's true. But so, yes, it's a sort of awareness of things might be more difficult for our kind of artists in the US because there isn't the same level of kind of federal support as there would be here.
I seem to get the impression as well that from things I've watched, we've watched a few kind of plays on that companies have done on Zoom. An example being the Apple Family plays that we watched, the Richard Nelson plays. And there seems to be a kind of somebody, I can't remember who it was, a lady was giving a bit of a spiel about some play that we were watching. And she said, Zoom isn't theatre and theatre isn't Zoom. And I just thought it was kind of, there were, I don't know how to say this really, there was a kind of bit of a begrudging attitude that they had to put things on Zoom. Whereas I think in Europe, that's been embraced much more that, oh, this is what we can do instead. You know, it's a much more positive side to putting on a play. We've seen quite a few readings, and the Old Vic have been doing some plays. The Old Vic in London have been doing some online work. And it's just a bit more of a positive spin to it, I think. Would that be a fair kind of thing to say?
Yeah, I think, possibly. Yeah.
That's just
I think you're right, because there is this back and forth. There's sort of like, there's very little middle ground when it comes to that opinion, because people are either like, oh, thank God it's here and we're doing it, or like, I'm not really interested in that. I want to go have a tactile experience of being in a theater and having that happen. And sure, we would all love that. And that will happen again. We just have to get through this and we will. And eventually all of this will just be something that happened to us. That's actually very, very astute, Howard, because if you read like Broadway.com or Broadway World or all that chatter, there's a lot of battles about that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm.
And you know, theater's not the only one doing it. I mean, they're holding the Emmy Awards tonight online. And, one thing that I've kind of noticed, though, and this is just generally with theater, is that COVID has sort of leveled the playing field a little bit with everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone pretty much is exactly where everyone else is. It's very, very difficult to be a theater diva right now. Or to be, you know, have all the money in the world to produce a giant musical. We all have to do the same thing. And in a way, I find that a little inspiring and a little freeing, because I think it provides more opportunity for people who don't necessarily have those opportunities to really, really surface with their vision. Do you guys ever feel that way?
I know what you mean. Just as an example, my daughter-in-law, who is American, in fact, but has lived in kind of Dublin for a few years now, but she's a composer. She writes what she calls pop operas, or she takes verbatim texts and turns them into opera, but not in the, not in perhaps the conventional sense of that word. But for example, she was commissioned by the Dublin Youth Theatre to write a piece kind of for them. And it was meant to be like a theatre piece, on the stage. And obviously that was not going to be possible. So they totally rethought the whole kind of project. And she very much worked with this group of young people as an ensemble a lot of the time. They did have a few socially distanced kind of face-to-face meetings, but most of it was done kind of through Zoom or online kind of platforms. And they've made this incredible and innovative kind of piece, which the young people were very much kind of co-creators of. She's just like an example of someone who has embraced it and said, well, this is a performance and this is the format we're doing it in, so we will try and make use of the tools that mm-hmm. this, brings you. It was just a very different way of thinking about it than perhaps I would have done. It was like, this is the situation and we'll, there's a lot of exciting things about working in this way. That's just, kind of one example. So I think amongst the kind of younger kind of generation, they're so much more attuned to the digital world anyway. It's not that they don't miss, I think, a real live, live audience kind of performance, but, if they're better at seeing what the opportunities are, than perhaps, we might be.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Kids these days.
Kids these days.
Tell us what our audience, by the way, how's your podcast going?
Good. Another thing we did. I forgot mm-hmm. about that. We did a piece for the podcast featuring myself and Howard, because we've never really performed together, I don't think. Agree? I don't know. I decided to kind of write something, and it's sort of based on our style of communication, shall we say. although the plot's fiction, but the way they speak to each other is very based on our patterns. That was a lot of fun, actually.
It was good fun,
and I had... I had a very good kind of reaction to it. So we want to have pieces which is not just us, that's the tricky part, is getting the ensemble involved in that work. I don't want to just write pieces for me and Howard or Howard, although that's fun. So getting the other voices is harder, but not impossible. That's another thing we need to kind of think about using that sort of platform. Because that's the other thing, is you get all sorts of, we've had people listening to the podcast, I'm sure you're the same, like from Australia and America and Germany and the Netherlands and India.
Yeah.
So you can kind of reach lots of people who you never have any idea that you'll be able to reach using these sort of platforms to, you know, so that's kind of nice. And sometimes that builds up connections, which you never know might be, you know, might be useful kind of in the future.
Yeah. Oh. Peter Brooks says you can make theatre everywhere and anywhere in the empty space. And that's what kind of this virtual platform is, really. It's a gift, isn't it? It's a gift of an empty space that you just fill with creativity and make something that you can share, I suppose. So
that's a great positive way to look at it. It really is. And that's, I think, what we need more of, because so many people are just shutting down. And I get it. I don't begrudge people for shutting down and not taking advantage of this time. Everyone has to get through it the way they get through it. They're going through it. Maybe they've had COVID, or they're dealing with somebody who's had COVID. So I get it. But I like, and I can tell that you guys have total leadership qualities, because that is where your mind is going. Your mind is going to the opportunity. And maybe not every day, but it always comes back. Like, you might have a bad day, and then the next day it comes back in your head.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a reason why something like that is coming into your brain, and, you know, and out of your mouth, or, you know, your pen or your keyboard. So I like that. And that's one of the things that I want to really emphasize here in talking with people, is that people are bouncing back and they're coming back. So what can our audience, our listeners, our viewers do ultimately to support acting out?
They can
send us lots of money.
they can see the stuff that we've got kind of online in whatever form. If they go to our kind of website, which is actingoutgroup.com, there'll be links to podcasts and video and kind of trailers from shows and kind of production photos and stuff, news about kind of what we've been doing. That's probably the best place. And it's got links to Facebook and Twitter through.
And then they can follow us.
And they can follow us, yeah, on the kind of various kind of social media platforms. And again, if they go to the website, they can get a sense of what's happening and the links to those.
Oh, they can email us and ask us a question.
And again, they can ask us
out on a date or any of those.
Yeah, and they can do that all through the website too. There's a kind of link there. They want to contact us. They want us to put on our show in New York or San Francisco in 2021. We'd be delighted.
Well, you're getting ready for that, and that's awesome. It really is. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, you're getting ready for the reemergence, and that's tough to face. But like I said, that's why you're leaders. Now, what a great segue. Why don't one of you tell us where our audience can find Acting Out online? Give us all of the social media. If there's one location that will take you everywhere, that's really helpful.
Yeah. Well, definitely the
website.
The website, yeah. So that is www.actingoutgroup.com.
www.actingoutgroup.com.
And that's got the links to all the other kind of social media sites. And it's a pretty comprehensive. I'm good at keeping it up to date. So it's a pretty comprehensive record of what we're doing, and links to, you know, things like you were saying, can you see me? You can kind of see it on there. The podcasts you can link to from there.
Wow. That's so great that you're like that. I mean, I have trouble just keeping my own websites. And I'm not kidding you guys. Like, I finally got myself on IMDb because of my screenplay. And it took me like 6 months just to figure that out. And, you know, I had like every day I'd go, okay, what problem do I solve today? And yeah, so that's good that you're constantly focusing on that. That's so needed. So that's awesome. Howard, do you help him with that?
No.
I said that without moving lips.
Well, you guys are delightful. I'm so glad that I got to talk to you. We don't get to talk to you enough. It's typically when we go over to to Europe and we meet you in London. And it's always really fun. Even if Howard won't do his American accent for me, which is great, which is such a great, it's funny. We were watching, David and I were watching Defending Jacob. Have you heard of this show with Michelle Dockery and Chris Evans? And I was like, so analyzing her American accent. It's hard to accept her with an American accent because we're so used to her saying, you know, like her posh Lady Mary accent. So I try to get a gauge of, you know, the spectrum and guys, he never bites. He never does. He did it for me one time. And then after that, I ask and he's, and as I turn off the camera, I'm sure that's when he'll, you know, start doing a monologue from All My Sons and then American Okay, well, I'm going to let you go because I know you're busy and you're, you know, keeping things afloat with acting out. But I really, really appreciate your willingness to come in and talk about everything that we've been dealing with COVID and to give a perspective that we don't necessarily have. Here in the States, there's a lot of similarities, but there are also some differences. And it's the similarities I really want to feature. So you know that you're not just there in your house, stuck there by yourself with nobody else doing what you're doing. Everyone's going through it. And the approach is far more uniform than people think.
Yeah.
So you guys are awesome and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for being with us, acting out. As I said, you're all amazing, and I wish you many broken legs as we navigate our way to a better future for theater. And we will, and we are. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, a big thanks to Acting Out. They're just fabulous and sensational, and I love them dearly. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket at facebook.com. Your Program Is Your Ticket. You can look it right up if you want to. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket. The website is, you guessed it, yourprogramisyourticket.com. Your Program Is Your Ticket is on iTunes and SoundCloud and now on the theater website, Thespi. Subscribe to Thespi. It's a really nice, high-level theater website. It's awesome, and I appreciate being on there. A quick thanks to North Coast NYC, the hip-hop improv theater ensemble that does my intro and outro music. You might be hearing it right now if my timing is good. Folks, take a little time to visit theater websites and see what they have to offer as we transition through and definitely out of this pandemic. Watch their content, give them all great ratings and reviews, and most importantly, donate, donate, donate. When Howard and Sean were talking about getting a government subsidy, if it's anything like it is in America, even if it's easier to get, it's still a lot of work, and it can be crazy. So if you could donate to them, that would be really great. Okay, folks, until our next show, so long, theater people, and curtain.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.